first half, second half, it's like chalk and cheese.
That can't be my best bet, but it's up there.
Yeah, it's no stupid red card, that's for sure.
We'll give you the balls so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh.
I'm not fully keeping it together.
Holding the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome back to another off-season episode of Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We are coming to you on the evening of Wednesday, November 13th, 2019, the little transfer window pre-MLS expansion draft 2019 has closed. Rabbi Mark Goodman, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
I am spectacular, Mattathias. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It's getting a little bit chilly here in Denver. I got my flu shot today, so my arm's feeling a little more sore than it usually is after the standard workout. But, you know, I'm excited and hopeful that we're going to be getting some news in the next couple of weeks, from the Rapids making moves or at least starting to announce stuff. So we've got something to talk about this offseason and just don't have to, you know, rerun the full form of some of the long form interviews we've done throughout the offseason just to fill in dead air. And as you've kind of alluded to, like, eventually we might have to do, like, you know, Rapids. We're going to have to do some pretty crazy, evergreen content in the event that the CBA doesn't get sorted out, you know, by February. I'm hoping that we're going to have some good content. I'm ready for winter. I'm ready for ski season and I'm ready for MLS silly season. And hopefully the Rapids give us some good stuff to actually talk about. Otherwise, you know, I don't know. We're going to have to do like a Rapids, like all time kit power ranking show. That's going to be fun. I'd rather be talking about actual soccer though.
Yeah. I love silly season. It's ridiculous because I get super nerdy about rosters and I am super into the bottom end of the roster. Like, there's nothing more interesting to me about speculating about the Colorado Rapids than wondering who's going to fill out spots 22 through 28, which is so ridiculous. Like, I'm interested in guys who are likely to get a total of 39 minutes for the club over their first 8 weeks before being loaned out to Charlotte to never be heard from again. You're like, that's my jam. The other thing is I love, or at least I used to, I loved filling out speculation about what players the Rapids might get. And one of my favorite ways to do this, I'm not making this up, and I know that Porrick Smith does this to some small degree on Football Manager, but I don't have Football Manager, not because I don't like the idea of Football Manager. I like the idea of Football Manager too much, Matt. I've always been afraid that I would become horrendously, cripplingly addicted to it. No, what I used to do is look at the positions the Rapids need and the price point that they could afford, and then go through every player on FIFA who was like roughly in that mathematical category, and then look at like how much they might cost. And then consider them, like, I would just go through and be like, okay, they need a 70 overall player with 80 pace who can fill in at right wing and ideally would come from a middle-ish league in Europe. And I would like generate lists of those players and I'd be like, yep, nope, just moved, too young, too old, da 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 da. I would do that for days, man. I've done that for years in articles I've written. You can go back if you're really bored and Google things I've written. And I have like dozens and dozens of players that I've come up with off those lists. Silly season is the best. But the last thing I'll say on this topic is this. I've been watching a lot of ACC soccer this year because I'm in Pittsburgh and they're in the ACC. And so my new silly season fun this year will be speculating on players for the MLS Super Draft, and more importantly, overinflating and getting overly excited about dribbly number 10s in the ACC, who I think should be first round picks in MLS, who are likely to not be.
All right, Mark. Yes, that's a you couldn't see this because this is a podcast, listeners, but there were multiple instances throughout that little rant by my rabbinical friend in which I was rolling my eyes and shaking my head, if not a combination of both. I understand that this speculation is important. It's data points. It's really good banter. It totally goes down the rabbit hole. It gets us clicks, but also a lot of it ends up, you know, ultimately becoming moot. There is an alternate universe, Mark, where we get to take the collective of that type of content we've done and compare that to, I think, what the Rapids have actually done behind the scenes in terms of deals that they thought about, players they looked at, and moves that actually happened. And I think we've got a Venn diagram of two circles that are maybe barely overlapping at all. Probably two circles. They're on opposite ends of the page plane that they're on. But in any case, we've got some news and notes that I just want to address to make you all aware for those of you who have not been perusing the interwebs or are not like me and Mark in that we subscribe to Google News regarding the Colorado Rapids and then scroll through everything through five pages insanely just to see the same headlines from 3 weeks ago. Cole Bassett, as of now, is training with Arsenal for the offseason. I wouldn't read into anything there, folks, regarding Bassett potentially leaving the club in 2020. Kai Kamara, rather, in a very diva way, announced through an article from BBC Sports that he has retired effective immediately with the Sierra Leone national team, so he will no longer be accepting the call for the upcoming AFCON qualifications with Sierra Leone. I'd revert you to BBC Sports for their article on that with some pretty harsh words, but I think some fair words from Kai Kamara regarding the Sierra Leone Federation, and obviously that simplifies a lot of things for him from a club standpoint because he's not going to have to take like a 12-hour flight with three connections through the middle of the season for meaningless friendlies for Sierra Leone. And then the Colorado Springs switchbacks, the local government ordinance down in the Springs, voted and approved the next stage of policy stuff regarding the switchback's new 8,000-seat stadium, like $35 million that their total spending, moving closer to a downtown location. That's in conjunction with some redevelopment and then also the indoor facility where Colorado College plays most of their athletics. Mark, I don't know if you know this, but Colorado College is the main hockey rival with DU Pioneers. There's something like, I think, 9 national championships on the men's D1 side between both of those in a rival. So a bit of a kind of like how you have the Pepsi Center and then, well, not really the Pepsi Center, but, you know, it's going to be the hockey arena. And then right next to it is going to be the soccer stadium. And then the MLS transfer window was this week prior to the expansion draft, Mark. And I think I speak for both of us in the general MLS Twitterverse in that I am flabbergasted at how little action actually occurred. You think about this time last year, I think it was a one-day, four-hour transfer window, and basically half of the teams in the league made a move. Half of those moves that were made were with FC Cincinnati to set them up for a better situation with the expansion draft. This year, there are 2 expansion teams coming in, so there's a total of 10 players that are going to get selected, with Nashville and then Inter Miami coming in, and there were a couple of, I assume, handshake deals with both of those 2 teams. The 2 or the 3 big dominoes that you had moving were Darlington Nagbe from Atlanta United to Columbus Crew. He'll be united with Caleb Porter, who was his manager at Akron University, and then also with the Portland Timbers, where he won an MLS Cup. Dax McCarty is leaving the Chicago Fire, who are completely burning it down from the ground. Other than Jordy Mihailovic, really, has gone to expansion side Nashville SC, and then Darwin Quintero, who is kind of on the outs already with Minnesota United, has been moved to the Houston Dynamo to be the new central attacking player with Todd Ramos. And in that move, Mark, maybe the one relevant thing from a Rapid standpoint is one of the assets moved there was Marlon Hairston. So Marlon Hairston, no longer a member of the Houston Dynamo, is now a member of Minnesota United. Mark, any general thoughts you have on any of these moves, Rapids news related or otherwise, and your general thoughts of the fact that, like, normally when this expansion draft happens, like, or when the window before an expansion draft happens, the rumor mill revs up, we're getting press releases by the hour, and like, this is, I think, the most silent a 3-day transfer window has happened in the history of this podcast.
Interesting. I don't know. I looked it up to see how many transfers happened last year, and there were 5. One of them was big and the other ones were small. This year, I mean, that sounds like basically you came up with roughly the same number. Darwin Quintero is a pretty decent sized transfer. But apparently the deal is just below the DP limit, so he's going to be a TAM deal. So that's kind of interesting. The other deal that was interesting today, which is which you didn't mention, is Zlatan Ibrahimovic is leaving, but he's not going anywhere. So there's no reason you should have mentioned it. He's not going. He hasn't announced where he's ending up. So there was some minor speculation he may stay within the league. But I don't think that that's likely unless he's making the kind of play that, the Rapids, defensive midfielder who came from the Revs a couple years ago, who
Jermaine Jones. Yes.
It's pulling off, which is Jermaine basically said, I'm leaving the Revs. I hate them. This is terrible. And forced his way out at gunpoint, essentially, to the Rapids because, I remember at the time on Twitter, he was basically like, I want to be transferred abroad. And the Revs were basically like, yeah, we can't do that, dude. You're under contract and we can't do it. So he wound up working himself a deal within the league. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I don't know. I think that's possible for Zlatan, but I don't think so. I mean, I think what the Galaxy were this last year, which was a team that had to play the ball wide in order to bend balls onto Zlatan's head nonstop all game long, did not work for them, and it ultimately hurt them as a team. There's not a lot of interesting Rapids news here. There's one last comment I'll make, which was there's some speculation that the reason there was so little news today was that in January, the collective bargaining agreement with the MLS Players Union runs out, and that means that they will go into a new negotiation, and it has been a fairly open and stated goal of the players.
MLSPA.
That they want to revamp the rules for free agency, and revamping the rules for free agency will significantly, or likely anyways, significantly change how much TAM teams get or how they will spend their TAM, which also means that trading a lot of GAM and TAM right now in the off season might ultimately be a really bad idea, because the whole calibration of either how much TAM you get or what TAM can be used for might be completely different in just 2 or 3 months. I don't know if I fully agree with that. I think that the bigger thing is that I don't think a lot of teams felt super compelled to lock up or make deals around their players to keep them from being exposed in the expansion draft. I think that's the big thing. It's like, if you're looking at your roster, you only have so many guys you can protect. There's a couple guys you're worried aren't going to make it. And you're trying to see, maybe I can swap them for a little bit of money or an international slot. The amount of uncertainty in the league, for all the reasons I mentioned, plus extra reasons of how big the league actually is now, that like the two teams that are coming in for next season have more teams to pick from, which means every team has fewer players they're likely to lose. The odds are lower. The value you can get for swapping a player is lower. So at this point, you're basically like, all right, fine. You know, take my 17th guy, take my 19th guy. It'll be okay. Mm-hmm. So, that's my long-winded explanation of why there probably weren't that many moves, but, the Dax McCarty move and the Darwin Quintero move were both, you know, sizable, interesting, worth noting. And I'm super excited for Marlon Harrison to get a fresh start, because Houston didn't really work out for him. And I think Minnesota might.
Yeah, no, Adrian Heath absolutely loves his wingers. He plays them in a variety of different roles. We saw that, whether it was fullbacks like Metzener and Hassani Dotson, and certainly saw it from the wing players like, Ethan Finley, at least is the first one who, and Miguel Ibarra are the ones who come to mind. So I'm not sure how much more playing time Marlon Harrison is going to get. I think there were moments where clearly we saw, especially under Pablo Mastroianni, that Harrison could be a weapon in a wide role, either in more of an attacking role or as an overlapping fullback. So from a style of play standpoint, he certainly fits in better at Minnesota than he did in Houston. How much further he maybe moves up or down in the pecking order is probably, still to be determined. But like you said, Mark, there's a lot of uncertainty in the league right now, and there's still a lot of other moves to come. And so maybe it's not clear right now, but maybe Adrian Heath and the brass at Minnesota have a better idea of where Marlon's going to fit in because there's two or three other things that they're going to do. So it might be clear to them that might have been communicated by now to Harrison's agent and to Harrison himself. We obviously won't know, and you know, we'll find out. And I think I speak for most people within the Rapids Twitterverse and most of our listener audience that I think we want to see Marlon Harrison do well in Minnesota, just maybe not when he comes to DSG Park. The only other thing that I'll maybe say on that, Mark, just because I'm tuned more in with LA Galaxy Twitter than you are, is the big rumbling right now is that one or both of the Milan clubs in Serie A are interested in Zlatan. So I definitely agree with you. I don't think there's no team in MLS other than the Galaxy that I think Zlatan ever had any interest in playing for. And now that it's, you know, been announced by both parties that they won't be renewing the contract, that I think he's probably looking at something elsewhere. And I think there's a good possibility that he just retires because, you know, he's been interested in getting into Hollywood. I think he'd be an absolutely fantastic Bond villain in the next movie. So obviously being in Los Angeles really helps him. And then, I'm not sure if you've read his book or familiar, but his wife was actually, they met in Paris. She's also Swedish, I believe, or she's Sweden through one parent and then French the other side. So she was originally a model. And then she started running a fashion brand once their kids got old enough in Paris for them to be going to school. And she had a little bit more free time during the day. And basically, the family absolutely hated Manchester, and that wasn't really an opportunity for her. So China's not really a better opportunity, but if you're going to do fashion and any kind of marketing from a product standpoint, like if you can't be in Paris, France, I think Los Angeles, California is a pretty good alternative. So it's not just what Zlatan would maybe be gaining or losing by continuing to play soccer, but also just financially where they were collectively, and they have a chance to be a really good, like, Hollywood, like on the, you know, on the front of the tabloids, power couple in Los Angeles. They could be able to do that in Milan. I'm not sure that there's anywhere else they could do that that would involve a good opportunity for her and a good soccer opportunity for Zlatan. Let's get to maybe the one other news that I think Rapids fans were hoping to get this week that ultimately hasn't come. That's not to say that it won't come, listeners. There's a good possibility. We've seen this plenty of times where a deal gets done at absolutely the last minute for the transfer window, which ended 6 p.m. today as of recording, that could come out in a press release tomorrow. So there is a non-zero, but I would say unlikely possibility that something happened for the Rapids today, the 13th, that you will hear about by the 14th or later, that happened during the transfer window, that just didn't get announced until by the time you're listening to this podcast or possibly after. The two things of relevance, Mark, as I wrote about for LastWordOnSoccer.com, is the Rapids are actively in negotiations with Columbus Crew to complete a transfer to bring Lalas Abubakar full-time to the Rapids in 2020. And Pori Smith confirmed that the Rapids have declined the 2020 team option for Tommy Smith and are working with him. He's kind of in that pseudo-weird range where he's not technically a free agent, but the Rapids can make him a bona fide offer regarding those two players. Columbus Crew has chosen to pick up the team option for him for 2020. I'm going to assume, given his potential value, that Crew are going to ensure that he will not be selected in the expansion draft next week. So that's probably a Rapids to Columbus negotiation and maybe fielding a couple of other calls to see who else might be optioned. Mark, your thoughts on the current state, given the fact that these are, you know, this is with the rock of the two starting center backs under Robin Fraser, and it's uncertain whether both or even either of them will be back in 2020.
I mean, my first choice pairing of center backs next year would be vintage 2018 version of Court Ford paired with Lalas Abubakar. I think it'd be an amazing pair back there. The only challenge is Ford is a little bit like Lalas in the sense that he is defensively solid, but not always really a danger on offense. He scored a lot of headed goals with U, and he scored a couple in his rookie year. But he is not the best ball playing center back. Whereas Tommy Smith was, he liked to drive forward and play that cutting ball, from the third to the first line, which was pretty cool, or the first to the third line, depending on how you read it. But, But Tommy's problem, of course, in 2017 and 2018, less so in 2019, was that he, when he was the last man on defense, he often biffed it real, real hard and made terrible mistakes. So leaving Tommy Smith in open space one-on-one with a guy was like a death sentence, and it was never fun. So, he made strides in 2019, and he looked a lot better once you put a D-mid in front of him as a shield. But, you know, I could do without Tommy Smith and Declan Wynn, and Danny Wilson in 2020. So losing any of them does not keep me up at night. I think Tommy Smith is useful if you can re-sign him at a lower rate, and have him as a bench piece, kind of like Bobby Berling was a couple of years ago for us. You know, Bobby was really phenomenal as a starter, but in his last year, they re-signed him, I think with the hope that he would be, you know, healthy and a starter. But the reality was, like, he was a useful cog. Then he got hurt.
And he never really came back. And then Rapids didn't pick up his option. And if I'm not mistaken, he retired shortly thereafter.
Yeah. It quietly, like, you know, was injured, nothing happened. And then he just kind of silently said, like, I won't be coming back. But, like, forget the injury stuff. Let's leave that aside. You know, Tommy Smith's best path for the Rapids is re-signing at a reasonable price, like $200,000-$250,000, and being, you know, a 1,000 minute, you know, 10 to 15 start kind of guy, as opposed to being the guy every week. I don't know if he wants that. You know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe he likes Colorado, because I think a lot of people who move to Colorado do like it. But he also may get He may be talking to his agent at the same time about, you know, can you get me back to the championship for the same kind of money I'm making? That'd be pretty cool. So, you know, all things are possible out there. I know for certain that the Rapids re-signing Abubakar would be a really good thing for all parties involved. I think from little birds I've heard around, I think the odds of it feel good, but you never know.
Yeah, no, I hear you on that front, Mark. You know, I think, Columbus has been, I think, was clear in the decision to loan him, and in some of the moves they made. They've already announced their full list of contract options that they've, chose to exercise, and they're still in negotiations with one of their bench center backs, and then also Harrison Afull, who I believe is out of contract, who was their big, left back that they had and was a big part of that defense when they made MLS Cup a couple of years ago. So, but I think it's kind of open that, you know, Lala is probably going to have to try and win a job and look impressive in preseason. And I think the fact that, you know, he was immediately loaned once it realized he wasn't going to be the starter anymore under Caleb Porter kind of shows where he is in the pecking order for 2020. So I think Columbus, especially with all the changes that they've had going on, they just bought Jonathan Tignagby, and then I think they were in rumors for a striker. And then if that was going to happen, they would be open to moving Giassi Zardes. And supposedly Bruce Arena, now with the New England Revolution, wanted Zardes back when Zardes started his career with the LA Galaxy under Bruce Arena. So Columbus has a lot of moves coming up. They've got a new stadium coming up. Ownership wants to spend a little bit more money. I think having a third center back on the bench who could potentially net you, you know, multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars in allocation money, that money's probably more valuable to them than Lawless is. And then obviously Lawless has been he's been very coy when asked by multiple members of the independent media when I've spoken to him about saying that he wants to be back. So I think this is something that all three parties want. I think it's something that would be good for all parties involved. I think it's just a matter of the money at this point. Check out my article at lastwordonsoccer.com, but further details. But in short, the rumor about the $1 million is not where either party's at right now, nor what they think what the final number's gonna be. I think it's just a matter of how much money and in what forms, GAM, TAM, of future considerations that Columbus wants. And just given that I think Lawless has proven to be a viable center back option, there's a few other teams that probably have more money in the bank than the Rapids could potentially outbid for him. I think the fact that we haven't heard any rumblings, and those teams are in markets where there's other people who typically get wind of this stuff long before we do, I have a sense that it's probably just those two parties negotiating, and it's about dotting the I's and crossing the T's. And, you know, I agree with you. Smith is currently training with Ipswich Town, his former club, in the championship for the offseason. So he's not back home, because, you know, he grew up in New Zealand, but I assume he still has a house or, you know, accommodations being in Ipswich with him and his family. And that's probably coming down to how much does he want term standpoint? What does he want from a money standpoint? And he was pretty open, at least in a radio interview he did with the local sports radio station in Ipswich, that he'd be open to coming back to the championship, or at least finishing out his career at Portman Road, where, whenever that occurs, and regardless of where Ipswich would be, you know, they were lower bottom, they were fighting off relegation the last couple of years recently. So I think it might be a question of what does Tommy want in terms of like that last payday before potentially his retirement, and does he want a situation where if things go south or he just gets to be really old and it doesn't make sense to have, you know, a really expensive international center back on the roster anymore, can the Rapids get out from under that, and does that make it easy for him to, you know, just sign a 6 month to finish off and be around the club with Ipswich? So those are probably the details that are going in there. I'm not sure where this is going to shake out. I agree with you, Mark, that in 2020, Tommy Smith is probably not a good asset in terms of spending international roster spot and targeted allocation money. If he can be a budget player, or maybe if he's in a position to get his green card in 2020, that probably gets a lot more tenable. I don't think he has a lot of value in terms of being moved within the league. So again, this is probably just a, can he and the Rapids come to an agreement? And then if not, or in the midst of that, you know, is there something that comes up in January with an opportunity for him to move back to England? It is time, Mark, for us to address the MLS expansion draft. Listeners, the expansion draft will be this coming Tuesday, November 19th. It will be at 3:30 p.m. streamed on MLSsoccer.com. Inter Miami CF and Nashville SC will both be selecting 5 players each. The teams that lost players to the FC Cincinnati draft will not be a part of this. So there are 19 teams that will be, they will have to make players available to those two clubs. Each of them gets 5. So then 10 of those 19 teams will lose a player. Basic rules are as such. It's 5 rounds. There's a timing, and there's no timeouts in there, and there's no trade. So pretty much it's just Inter Miami select a team, Nashville select a team, multiply that 5 times until we are done. Once a player is selected from one team, the rest of their players become ineligible. So those 19 teams, folks, will lose, 10 of those teams will lose one player. It is impossible for you to lose a second player. So if the Rapids get somebody selected with the first pick by Inter Miami, officially they can't lose anybody else. Homegrowns are exempt, as long as they are 25 or under, so born in the year of 1994 or earlier. For a reference point, Mark Court Ford, born in 1996, he is protected, and then Dylan Cerna, born in 1994, just barely makes the cut, also protected. So every single homegrown, folks, not gonna lose him. Sebastian Anderson, Cole Bassett, Court Ford, Matt Hundley, Sam Rabin, Sam Vines, Dylan Cerna, they are off the board. From the rest of that group, there's also the Generation Adidas players who, if they are still in the program, are also automatically protected. There's not a lot of precedence in here or ease for us to get an answer as to whether or not Jonathan Lewis, who was a GA player in 2019, will still be one in 2020. For the purposes of the notes that I've taken, Mark, I've chosen to be conservative and assume that Jonathan Lewis would have to be protected. So in there, the Rapids have 18-ish players who are still on the roster. Obviously, don't have to worry about Tim Howard, Skelton Gashi, Nana Boateng, or certainly a Johan Blomberg. But removing those guys, there's 18 players in there that the Rapids could potentially lose, and they get to protect up to 12 of them. And then there's a few other details that aren't relevant from a Rapids standpoint, but the two expansion sides have an option to select players who are available via free agency, and then from there they effectively gain their MLS rights and negotiating rights, and that's a lot of miscellaneous details you can read up on the various press releases, not really relevant from a Rapid standpoint. Mark, anything you want to say on the expansion draft in general, or shall we head to the Rapid specific preview of this?
Let's do the preview.
Okay, so I have on my notes, folks, 18 players, and then with an asterisk next to Jonathan Lewis. And so of these 18, potentially 17, the Rapids get to protect 12 of them. So here's the list of full players that I have that the Rapids could protect. Kellen Acosta, Clint Irwin, Nicky Jackson, Kai Kamara, Jonathan Lewis, asterisk, Nicholas Mesquita, Sam Nicholson, Kofi Opare, Jack Price, Andre Rawls, Keegan Rosenberry, Diego Rubio, Abdul Gwatubaye, who is currently getting selected by the Rwandan national team for AFCON qualification, Andre Shinyashiki, Axel Schuberg, Tommy Smith, Danny Wilson, Declan Wynn. Lalas Abubakar is not on here, aforementioned, because officially for 2020 he's on the roster with Columbus. Columbus has picked up his option. We will find out one way or another on Saturday when all of the players available for selection are announced whether or not Columbus has chosen to protect Lalas. I'm going to assume, Mark, that they're going to protect him just because of the potential money value that he has. So, Mark, of those 12 players, of those 18, potentially 17 players, I think it's easier for us to discuss who the Rapids are not protecting. I'm going to give you four names right off the bat that I think no matter what, the Rapids don't protect. Kofi Opare, he was a league minimum contract, didn't really play, wasn't favored by any of the three coaches. Andre Rawls, you don't really protect that third string goalkeeper. With all due respect to what Rawls he accomplished this season, Mark, I'm sure you could give us a list of five USL keepers the Rapids could pick up in the event that they lose him. Danny Wilson, for the same reason that Tommy Smith doesn't have a whole lot of value on the open market in MLS, I'm not sure an expansion team is going to select a player who takes up target allocation money, costs an international roster spot, and has just provided the performance that Danny Wilson has. I think there will be other players at better and more deep teams that will be easier for you to pick off, or at the very least, as we've seen in the past, a lot of these teams don't so much select players for their roster, so much as select assets that then they can move to get more allocation money or get the players that they wanted but who were protected. I don't think Danny Wilson checks any of those boxes. And then Declan Wynn, he was injured, he was back in training, but was, you know, sparsely involved in some of the team drills. I think the Rapids are probably moving on from him, given that he was an Anthony Hudson guy, and who knows where he is from a health standpoint. Again, if a team wants to take a flyer on him, who knows where he is from a physicality standpoint, I think you leave him exposed and assume that nobody's even looking at him. Mark, any questions regarding those four players that I have mentioned?
No, I think those are all really good picks. I think the only possible player who kind of is a bubble player who you could slot in and replace with potentially Declan Wynn if the Rapids decide they want that kind of guy who can play as a center mid or as an outside back. And Wynn has played on both the left and the right flank, so he has a small amount of ubiquity. You might want to say you protect either Declan Wynn or Danny Wilson for whatever reason, and you expose Nicky Jackson instead. That Nicky Jackson as a player is, he has potential, but I think his potential curve has been nipped in the bud a lot by Andre Shinyashiki's acquisition. I think the homegrown status of Matt Hunley, a wide forward who has a lot of the upside of Nicky Jackson, but his growth potential is way higher considering he's much younger. I think Nicky Jackson is a fine player, but having watched enough of him and enough of him in the USL and enough of other USL strikers, he seems to look like a guy who is a very solid future USL striker who's going to get 10 to 12 goals at that league. But I don't think he's ever going to evolve or mature into an MLS ready striker, and I think his path in Colorado is blocked. So my one funny thing is that I often think of players with the Rapids as if you love somebody, set them free. You know, the old line from I don't know, like a 1970s song. But like that I kind of sometimes look at players and hope that the team will expose them to the expansion draft, not because I don't like them or don't want them to be Rapids or they're not a useful cog, but because they're not really getting enough run for the Rapids. So to that end, I could also see hypothetically Axel Schoberg being exposed, not because the Rapids don't really, not because he's lower on the pecking order than say a Kofi Opare, but because they want him to go and be happy. I mean, last year, Skelzengashi was exposed, which was a pretty big shock because he was a DP. But it was also basically like, we don't rate this guy. We don't think we don't think he's going to be here. We don't want him to be here. Mm-hmm. Please take him off our hands.
Yeah. No, Mark, I agree with you on the Gashi side of things. So, I mean, you know, I think it's a similar approach for the Rapids with Danny Wilson, and even throw Tommy Smith into there. So, listeners, if the Rapids select a player who had a contract option for 2020 that the opponent that their previous team chose to decline, in selecting that player, they automatically have to accept that 2020 team option. So I'm going to assume, if I'm Inter Miami or Nashville SC Brass, that if the Rapids chose to decline Tommy Smith, then probably you don't want to select him as well. So similar to there being sticker shock associated with Skelton Gashi, and similar to the value and what you would have to give up for Danny Wilson, for a similar reason, I don't think people are selecting Tommy Smith. There's just going to be better options and more valuable options, both within the league and from a contract, you know, return on investment standpoint. So that removes Tommy Smith from the roster as well. And I know you kind of already said your spiel about Nicky Jackson, Mark. So that leaves us with, that gets us up to five players that the Rapids are leaving exposed in the expansion draft who are relevant to the 2020 team potentially. And that leaves us with only one spot, with only one player that needs to be included. So I'm going to give you a list of players who I have automatically protected. Kellen Acosta, Clint Irwin, Kai Kamara, Jonathan Lewis, **, Nicholas Mosqueda, Sam Nicholson, Jack Price, Keegan Rosenberry, Diego Rubio, Andre Shinyashiki. That gets us to 10 protected players. I think if any of those guys are left exposed, immediately the Rapids are losing them. So that leaves them with two spots for three players, the aforementioned Axel Schuberg, Abdul Gwatubaye, and Nicky Jackson, of which they can protect two. This conversation is really moot in the event that Jonathan Lewis still is a Generation Adidas player, in which case the Rapids then, instead of having two available slots, have three available spots and are just leaving those of five aforementioned players unprotected. I think there's value behind protecting any one of them. You know, Axel probably has the most immediate, can contribute and start for an expansion team MLS value. I'm not sure from a stylistic standpoint that he would be really valuable to what those two teams are trying to accomplish. I think where Gwatubaye and Jackson have some value in that they spent time in 2019 in USL. The Rapids were not able to work it out to where Nicky Jackson could be with the Colorado Springs Switchbacks, so he went back to Charlotte. But just that geographically and from not being able to play at altitude made him he was there and he was in Charlotte and he wasn't getting called up unless he had like 2 weeks to prepare to then be available to the Rapids for a first team standpoint. There's many more closer USL teams that Nicky Jackson could be loaned out to within the southern part of the Eastern Conference, both for Miami and for Nashville. So he could be close by training and playing regularly and then more easy to be kind of like that tweener, like that guy who's on a AAA baseball team, but then is the first guy added when the MLB team expands to the 40-man roster for the end of the regular season. I'd put Gwatubaye on that list as well, who is maybe the one good player defensively who got regular minutes for the Colorado Springs Switchbacks. So in that, I think not a tough decision in that this isn't like, I don't think the Rapids could lose any one of these three players, and I don't think that would significantly alter their plans for 2020. But I think it's a difficult decision in that basically they're choosing, here's the one guy that both of these two expansion teams are going to look at with any serious value in terms of thinking they're the player that we want to select. Now, the advantage is, in the event that they can only protect one of those, as soon as they lose that guy, they don't lose anybody else. But so I think that's a difficult question. Again, this whole conversation might be moot in that Jonathan Lewis could still be in the GA contract, in which case protect all three of these guys if you want Andre Rawls, Kofi Opare, Tommy Smith, Danny Wilson, or Declan Wynn, you can have them. So normally, Mark, this is kind of that weird week from a podcasting standpoint in which we have to do a end of that transfer window pod. We have to then preview the expansion draft. We then, after the list gets released, maybe do a short something or other or a few series of tweets on, okay, here's what we know now. What can we lean from that and who the Rapids could potentially lose, and then a post game as or a after expansion draft thing as well. So there's potentially like four different either articles or series of tweets or an actual podcast that you could do in that week. And all honesty, I think we've done enough to preview what the expansion draft is. And again, if that asterisk is true and Jonathan Lewis being protected as a GA contract, we don't really need to do anything once that roster's announced, and I don't think anything of significance is going to happen on Tuesday when the expansion draft happens from a Rapid standpoint. With that, listeners, we are going to close things out. Last week, I got a good little sit down with Rapids general manager Porrick Smith. So we're going to run that interview that got interrupted into two sides. I was actually invited to a special screening of the Tim Howard documentary that the club put out. I would highly recommend that you check that out on the various platforms if you haven't seen it already. But so we had the part of the interview, and then we got to see the documentary, and then the interview is, and the second half of the interview, we addressed a number of things, center back and offseason related, and then just big picture stuff for 2020. So without further ado, here's that interview. We hope you like it. We'll see you next week. Hopefully we're not talking about the Rapids losing Diego Rubio in the MLS expansion draft. We'll see you then, listeners. So my first question, Porrick, was going to be about what you thought of the Tim Howard film. So I guess, so you have seen it or no?
We've had it for a while. Actually.
Okay.
You know, it's been built up, but we'll skip on from that.
Okay. Have you had any recent interactions with Tim? How's he doing now that he, you know, doesn't have stuff to worry about next year as much?
I've given Tim a couple of days, but I think one of the things we've said is that we're certainly going to stay in touch. I mean, I think there's no doubt it's been, you know, huge for us as a club to have someone like Tim involved for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you very much. You know, he was a wonderful influence around the locker room, especially as we continue to move toward a more youth-based model.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he and I have talked about, you know, what's going to happen for him in Memphis and how we can maybe have players go there to support that as well. So
okay.
We will look at that. We have a lot of young players coming through. Obviously, we've got a wonderful relationship with the Switchbacks, and that's something that, you know, we're absolutely committed to. But sometimes it's good to have a player that goes, you know, a little bit further afield and matures and grows up. And if you look at what happened to Sam Vines and his development when he went to Charlotte, I think being away for a while was actually a good experience for him. So
okay.
we'll look at that. But always, we have a good relationship with him.
Always be closing. In a word, who wins MLS Cup on Sunday?
Seattle.
Okay. And then Pablo Mascherini recently appointed to Todd Ramos' staff of the Houston Dynamo. Thoughts on a Rapids legend getting back in the game?
Yeah, thrilled for Pablo. I mean, such a great guy. And it's funny, they rang me and asked, you know, what my thoughts were on Pablo. And I think it goes without saying, one of the best defensive minds that the league has kind of seen in recent years. Great man motivator, you know, and we're delighted to see Pablo back in it. It's going to be, you know, an interesting time when he comes to the stadium next year. We have a lot of things that we're planning next year that Pablo would be a part of. So it's going to be fun, but I'm thrilled for him, excited for his next stop.
A couple recent players have gotten called up for the national team. I kind of, in talking with coaches' staff over the years, I understand the procedure or checking in from a player when they're in training during the middle of the regular season, but, you know, they had the end of the camp regiment, and now they're going into their offseason, and maybe they're training away from the team and everything. What is it like in terms of checking in to see how things go for, say, you know, a Jonathan Lewis or Abdul Guatubaye with the national team where they're potentially traveling, and then maybe you're not physically seeing them for a couple months?
Well, I mean, there's normal protocols in place for when a player goes away on international duty, so there's good relationships between our medical staff, our team operations staff, management, myself included, and the various counterparts at the national associations. So that's not something that we're overly concerned about. You know, it's good for them to be continuing to get, you know, good training, competitive games. That's always a positive. So that's a very normal thing, whether it's in season or out of season. That relationship between national teams and clubs is pretty standardized. In terms of the players being away for the off season, it is a long off season. I think that's one of the idiosyncrasies of MLS. It's very different to everywhere else around the world. But again, we have a very strong structure in place and process where we map that. Every player goes away with a detailed off-season plan. There's regular check-ins on the back of that. I know a number of our players like training in the off-season over at DU with Matt Shaw. We have a good relationship, obviously, through Coach Franks and with the group over there. So, you know, the work doesn't stop, and I think our medical and operation guys are absolutely fantastic at keeping on top of that.
Omar and I had a good laugh about that this week. I'll ask it in a very non-confrontational way. Where is the club in terms of their interest of bringing Lawless Abubakar back in 2020 and the financial gumption in which to make that occur?
So we're certainly interested in bringing Lawless back. You know, I think that's something we've been very open about and very clear about since the start. I think, you know, Lawless has actually been very open about the fact that he wants to come back. I think he really enjoyed his time here. He showed the defensive qualities he can bring to the game. I think he fits in from a cultural perspective. So we're certainly keen to bring Lawless back. we're in negotiations at the moment. We'll see where those go.
Okay, and then Tommy Smith had an interview, I think this week. I don't know if he's officially now with New Zealand, but he was with Ipswich. At the time said that negotiations were still happening. I believe there's a team option for 2020. What are those conversations looking like?
Yeah, we've declined the team option, and we're still in discussions with Tommy. And we're looking at various different avenues to make sure that ultimately we're giving Robin the best squad that he can possibly have to go into next year and put a playoff team together. So we're going to make the right decisions for the team, right decisions for the club, but those negotiations are ongoing.
Okay, in general, not asking about these players, but you know, at least I've noticed that there's a method to the madness in terms of the analytics that the team's had. We've had some conversations. I'm not suggesting that you do this, but if I were to be given access to that back room, I think I have a few good educated guesses at properties you saw from a Jack Price or from a Keegan Rosenberry, for example, that would have been seen as value. Maybe you find some metric for quantifying that, and ultimately that coming into here's how much this player would be worth to us as a member of the Colorado Rapids. From a media or a fan standpoint, when a major trade happens, you know, Darlington Nagbe might be sent to Columbus at this point. We maybe look at another move that happens within the league. So if a major striker would become available, maybe we look at some of the recent moves that Ola Kamara has had over the years in terms of a market value of players. How much is the club taking into account their own internal approaches to evaluating players vis-a-vis the market dynamics?
So I think one of the things I've said from when I first joined the club is that the analytics side is incredibly important to us, but it's just another string to our bow, essentially. So we don't want to sign a player, nor will we ever sign a player based on analytics alone, but also we don't want to sign players without looking and understanding what the analytics is telling us about that player. I think we've got two incredible people in Fran Taylor, the assistant GM, and Matt Pfeffer, who heads up our analytics side. You know, those guys are really producing some quality work and some proprietary information that is very valuable to us as we go about evaluating players and targets. Also the traditional scouting side, you know, you look at Mitch Murray, you look at Chris Siddebart, the connections we have in the network we're now building down in South America and in Europe as well, and into Africa, which is the next area that we're going to expand into. You know, we're very excited about what we're doing there. The market dynamics, though, are obviously a crucial part of it. You know, you've got to look at what the availability of certain players are, and ultimately a player's worth what somebody else is willing to pay for them at times, and that obviously is a part and parcel of what we do, especially within the league where there's a premium on American players. And you know, it's something you've seen, you know, internationally. There's a premium on English players in the Premier League, German players in the Bundesliga. So that's something that we do have to take into account, but we want to take a balanced approach to this. It all starts with knowing the philosophy of the group and the club, distilling that down then into the type of team that we want to see, the attributes that we want to see from individual players within those structures and systems, and then identifying the right players to fit that. And it's a collaborative approach that involves everybody from myself right the way down through Robin, Fran, and the whole group. So it's something that we feel we're now building into a very, very strong group, where our evaluation and recruitment is starting to really get to the levels that we want it to be at.
All three DP slots are going to be open on January 1st. You know, we've had this conversation for years, it feels like, and the plan for the longest time was to bring in a number 9 and a number 10. This was prior to Kai Kamara falling into your lap last year. What's the plan for acquiring him for, I would say, below market value?
That's not falling into a lap. Okay. But we can have that discussion.
There was some good work. I think now with what he has done, he is worth more than an international roster spot.
Yes.
Okay. In any case, what's the plan now for those two DP roster slots, and then how involved is Robin in those decisions as far as just positional, maybe geography, or specific personnel?
So I think first and foremost, I think that the day and age in which people look at DPs really needs to end in MLS. You know, I think since DPs became a kind of a known term in the lexicon of the sports fans, like, we've moved on to TAM and discretionary TAM. And right now you can have a situation in MLS where you can have a discretionary TAM player making 1.4 million and a DP making 700K.
Yeah.
And that's the way the rules are. So the way we look at this is not as DPs or TAM, we look at it as discretionary spending.
Okay.
Ultimately, we have the ability to spend X amount of money, and our job is to make sure that we're using that money in the best possible way to build the most competitive roster that we can. I think, you know, you're absolutely right. Last year, if I look at it, Kai Kamara had an absolutely fantastic season. Scores 14 goals. He missed three PKs, which could have taken him even further. Diego Rubio actually scored more goals than him from open play. So that's something that people forget. And then you've got Andre Shinashiki right behind him, who's you know, chipped in with seven goals and three assists, I believe, possibly four. You know, so we feel like at that number nine position, in particular in the way that, that Robin wants to play, we're pretty deep right there now. Now, there's no doubt, since I've been here, we've talked about the fact that we didn't have that creative, attacking midfield type player, and that remains very much a key focus for us as we go into this offseason. We also want to start looking at these younger players. You know, we've been very, very open about the fact that we want to be a club that, you know, identifies, recruits and develops young players. And that's not only within the homegrown market, but it also extends further beyond that and into the rest of the United States, where we've gone after the likes of a Jonathan Lewis and Andre in the draft, although I look at him a little bit more as the academy side, having played in our PDL for 2 years. But we want to go even further afield as well. And I think it's very important with where MLS is going right now that we're keenly focused on attracting good young talent, South America, Europe, Africa, and looking at developing those players for potential future resale. I think MLS is one of the largest leagues in the world that really doesn't have a huge number of external transfers or outgoing transfers. And that's something that we're keen to be at the forefront of. So I think you're going to see a nice balance from an impact level DP perspective and also then potential long-term vision perspective, where we're looking at bringing in players that are going to help us in the immediate term and then players that will have value both on the field and then in potential resale in the future.
So I guess on that note also, how critical is it going to be timing-wise? You know, you've talked about in the past wanting to build a club that's obviously sustainable for the future, and so maybe you find the guy who's absolutely, I'm not suggesting any names, but maybe you find a guy who's absolutely right, but he's not available until the summer. Vis-a-vis, do you want somebody to come in, have a proper preseason and everything, get to know Robin and the team as opposed to having to jump in? We've seen players come in the middle of the season and be fantastic, like Nico Lodero, who could win a second MLS Cup. We've seen other players come in and basically that last 6 months is complete wash. How are you and how's Robin in terms of thinking getting the right guy versus getting the timing right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, you can point to the exceptions, and I think someone like Lodero is an exception. There is an acclimatization period that comes with joining MLS from outside, and I think that's normal given what we face here in the US from a soccer perspective. What I would say is that our targeting of players isn't just beginning now. You know, it started 18 months ago, really, when, you know, we understood Tim was retiring. We knew we weren't going to renew the Gashi contract. So we knew the position we were going to be in at that stage, and we started our recruitment process then. So we've got a deep, you know, list of targets in the various positions that we're looking for, and our aim would be to bring them in for the January, you know, so that they're here for pre-season on day one and ready to go then at the start of the season. But again, we've got to make smart decisions, and this is a very volatile environment, you know, and different teams will come in with different offers. The type of player we're looking for now is not the type of player that's just being, you know, pursued by one or two clubs. They're being pursued by multiple clubs. So not only do you have to go through the entire identification of the player, but the actual recruitment process is a longer and more challenging process now as well. But we've been engaged in this for quite some time. We like the targets. We think they're going to fit very, very nicely in what we're doing. You know, Robin and I are very much on the same page with that, and the communication in that perspective has been fantastic. He's been, you know, Robin's been just exceptional to work with, and you can really see why he's so highly thought of around the league, why his reputation is the way it is, and ultimately why he's won at every stop that he's been, you know, as an assistant coach there. And we're very excited about that. We're very excited about how that's all coming together, and we think the targets that we have are going to fit in well, both on the field and then, very importantly, from a cultural and character standpoint as well in the locker room.
I've had a good couple conversations with Brian Crookham, and he kind of talked about how at least recently the harvest has happened in terms of Cole Bassett, Sam Vines, and Seb Anderson developing relatively early relative to their age group. And so maybe there are a couple 16-year-olds who were with the latter two of those who maybe need a couple more years, and then obviously there's some guys who've gone through the program and are with the, you know, are in the college system now. And he kind of implied that, you know, the DA is still doing really good, but maybe that next signing could be a couple of years away. Where's the DA in terms of development and what that looks like going forward?
I think we're, I certainly believe that the strides we've made on the academy side have been enormous over the last 3 years, I would say. That's really when we started to change the dynamic, and we're very clear about our intent that we're not there at the academy level to win games, we're there to develop professional soccer players. Now, ultimately, as you do that and as you provide the environment in which, you know, the elite players can flourish, naturally you're going to win soccer games because the overall standard improves. And I think we've now got to that point where, you know, our teams are consistently competitive, playing a good brand of soccer, a good style of soccer, and developing players that have the all-round attributes to potentially contribute in the future. Now, I think absolutely players develop at different levels, but one of the things that we're quite keen on is identifying the best talent that we can, bringing them in, and then developing them as quickly as we possibly can. This is a young sport, you know, and if you look around the world, players are breaking in at 16, 17, 18. Now, we have some incredible guys that are, you know, have come through our academy and are now playing in the collegiate game. The likes of Greg Tracy up in Portland, you know, who's just been a wonderful player for our academy over the years and a great leader in that group. And he's now progressing at the collegiate level. You look at Milo Garvanian, who's at UNC in North Carolina, again, very similar. You look at what Sam Raven did, you know, ultimately going to Wake Forest. He was a four-year every game starter there, went to multiple Final Fours. You know, that's one of the things that we're looking at here. Not every player that comes through the academy will be a professional soccer player, but we also want to develop the people. That's a key tenet for us. You know, we really need to develop strong characters and good mentalities. And those are three players who, you know, they haven't been signed to professional contracts yet, but we're still incredibly proud of the fact that they've come through our academy. And we'll continue to monitor them and watch them with, you know, with a very, very close eye on what their future looks like. I think from our perspective on the professional side of it, you know, there's no doubt we've gone through a very strong spell recently with the likes of Seb, Cole, Sam Vines, obviously Courtney, who were, you know, we're expecting to come back, and knowing Courtney's determination, we're expecting him to be, you know, chomping at the bit for day one there. So we're excited about that. We do have a couple of guys that, you know, we're contemplating whether we sign them in January. I think Gabe Rodriguez has done fantastically well down at the Switchbacks. You know, Will Vint has been very, very strong since he's come back over into our academy, so we'll need to have a look at Will as well. So we're excited about where the future's going. We have a number of players in international camps, but it's important that we progress them at the right levels. And one of the things that we say to all of the parents of our elite level players, so the players that we put on the elite player development pathway, you know, we tell the players that it's not a linear progression. There's plenty of ups and downs involved in this, and the key thing for us is communicating with both the player and the family to help them understand how we're going to manage that and how we're going to help them through. And ultimately, that's where everything's got to be for us. We've always got to be thinking about what is in the best interest of the player, how can we help this player reach his maximum potential, and how can we start getting that maximum potential to a level that's going to impact us, not just on the MLS side, but again, with potential resale value into Europe.
And then also, I have to imagine there's a reputation aspect of where, you know, I think it was Matt Hundley who said Brian Crookham approaches it from one family, one club. And so the fact that you feel taken care of, and maybe that player isn't an elite player, but maybe the Development Academy puts them in a position to get a college scholarship. And obviously, you know, if everybody's, I think about this with like the players jumping ship from LA Galaxy to LAFC, for example, and I'm sure that those guys talk, and if you talk about it from the standpoint of everybody who leaves your DA Academy, whether it's the guy who just gets it through or Cole Bassett or one of his teammates, that if they speak well of how the club treats them, that that's better for your reputation recruiting the next guy.
100%. And I would actually say we want to go even deeper than that. You know, every single member of our academy is a part of our family. Every single member playing in CRISC, in Colorado Rapids Youth Soccer Club, is a part of our extended family. And I actually want us to get to the point where every soccer player, male or female, playing in the state of Colorado is a part of our family. And I think the work that's going on with the CSA right now is really terrific. And I think the World Cup bid is certainly starting to galvanize a lot of that. You see the collaborative effort, and you see the amount of people in the community that are all working together towards a common purpose. Now, ultimately, the responsibility is on the Colorado Rapids to be the top of that pyramid. But to do that, we have to own that, and we have to own it in a way that's responsible for all athletes throughout the state of Colorado. Yeah. We're very clear about what we want to be. We want to be the heartbeat of sport in the state of Colorado, and to do that, we have to continue to cultivate the young players right the way around the state, from a recreational level right the way through. And we have to show them that there's something that they can be a part of, be a part of. And for some, it will end up being a supporter of the club. For some, it'll be a coach at the club. For some, it'll hopefully be a player at the club. Whatever that is, we want this to be bigger than just a game of soccer on a Saturday night. That's the very, very top of this. But we want to continue to grow the sport in the state of Colorado, along with the CSA, along with all the clubs here. And it's something, again, that we have to look at this. Every Cole Bassett, Matt Hundley, Sam Vines, you know, Seb Anderson, the work that's been done by, you know, Real Colorado, by Rush, by, you know, Storm back in the day before they went into Crisk, by Boulder, by Fort Collins Arsenal, there's tremendous work being done, you know, north to south, east to west in the state of Colorado. A lot of dedicated, hardworking people, and ultimately we want to be there to help continue to grow the sport in this state.
Alan Koch has taken over of the USL club, Colorado Springs Switchbacks, second year of affiliation there. I've got to assume that there were some lessons learned with things that worked and didn't work. What does that affiliation look like in 2020?
I think it's much stronger now in 2020. And I think the work that, you know, that Nick has done down there in the Switchbacks, and how he and his dad Ed are bringing that club along, mm-hmm. is something we're very excited about. You know, the new stadium, everything that's happening down there, it's pretty exciting. I think Brian Crookham has done a wonderful job along with some of our coaches to try and, you know, make the connection. And obviously it hasn't just been the players that we've sent on loan, we've also had academy players that have stepped up and played down there as well. So it's been a very, very good relationship so far. No doubt there's been lessons learned, and I think I'm excited about seeing how, you know, we take those lessons on board and improve things going into next year. I think Alan is a very, very shrewd hire, I think, on the part of Ed and Nick Reagan. I think they've brought in somebody who understands the USL at a very, very strong level, and obviously has been hugely successful there. He's also done it at the MLS level, so he knows what it takes to bring a player up and bring a player through. So we're excited about it. We had a wonderful technical committee meeting last week where Alan was there along with some of our academy coaches, Chris Cartledge, the head of our academy, Brian Crookham, Robin and myself and Fran. And I think what was good to see from my perspective was the communication between all of the guys and the understanding of how we're going to make this work for ourselves. Like, how are we going to take a player from the age of 7, 8, 9, coming through the youth club, coming into the academy, develop them, pushing them, challenging them, pushing them into the USL sphere, into a professional environment, and then ultimately into MLS where they can contribute and potentially into Europe. So it's a good system. We feel like it's a very, very important part of our overall development pathway, and I'm excited to see how it continues to grow this year.
Robin Fraser's first off season with the club, how collaborative is that going to be through all the various drafts and things that are occurring, and how much are his preferences going to be taken into account with some of your personnel decisions?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Robin's a key part of this, and I think, you know, the amount of time that Robin, Fran and I spend together, you know, will make that very, very clear. But again, from day one, from the first time I spoke to Robin and we kind of talked about the possibility of him becoming coach, it was just clear to me how aligned we were already. You know, he thinks the game in an incredible way. He's obviously got just a wonderful talent for coaching and for getting through to players. And I think Tim Howard mentioned earlier on about how some coaches, when they say something, the light bulb goes off for players. And he spoke about how Robin was one of those coaches. When he gives instruction, when he talks and explains things to players, they get it. He does that in such a natural way that, you know, it's really helpful for us, especially a club like ours that wants to bring through young players who need that coaching. And I think Robin is one of the best in the business when it comes to that. So we've had a lot of discussions about what we want to do next year, very much on the same page. We're actually traveling to Argentina, Fran, Robin and I, next Wednesday, I believe, then on to Europe after that. So it's a very, very, you know, strong process, but it's a very much a collaborative process, and everybody's on the same page here, which is ultimately what's needed. It sounds so basic, you know, maybe it's not as common as people think, but we're fortunate that in Robin we've got somebody who, you know, just fits in seamlessly with what we're trying to do here, and I think is, as I said, he's one of the best in the business. We're excited about it.
So now that we've seen it, Pork, your thoughts on the film from start to finish?
I think it's incredible. I think it's really good. I think Riley and Alex and the crew did a fantastic job with it. But I think, you know, when you look at Tim and the legacy that he leaves here, it's just such an incredible career. Mm-hmm. You know, to do what he's done at the highest levels and to do it with you know, just such a positive attitude all the time, and then to have the impact that he's had both on and off the field, I think he can be incredibly proud of ultimately what his career has been. And I think I look at it quite a bit. Like, I mean, you saw the Howard's Heroes pieces in it. Like, and I kind of spoke about this a little bit when we had the dinner for him. But, you know, that locker room, especially on those away trips, can be a pretty cold, grey space. Mm-hmm. And, you know, away games, hey, they're tough in MLS. You're going to lose a few. Mm-hmm. And he walks out of there with a smile on his face and goes in and meets those kids. Mm-hmm. And he just gives them hope. He's an inspiration to them. He gives them confidence. He gives them a faith that, you know, they can succeed and they can be something great. And that's something that not a lot of people get to see, that side of them.
Yeah.
And that's truly remarkable. And I think I'm incredibly proud that we've had him here at the club. I think he's leaving a great legacy here for us as well. And I'm excited to see what the future holds for him. But yeah, the film itself, I think, is excellent. I think it's a really great job by everyone involved.
Good stuff. Robin came from an environment in Toronto that was big on analytics and sports science, and certainly when you have to take care of two Jose Altidore hamstrings, that's a big deal. What's going to be his approach to those two things, and how is that evolving within the club?
So his approach to analytics and...
Yes, analytics and then sports science, excuse me.
Okay, I mean, they're fundamental to the running of any modern-day soccer club. I mean, I think... Obviously, that was the initial, you know, part of my initial scope when I came here originally. So obviously, I'm somebody who very much believes in analytics. We've brought in, you know, just incredibly gifted people in Fran and Matt. And obviously, Fran has other responsibilities as well. Matt focused on the analytics side. But I think we've got a very, very good group there. And I think we're doing some very, very interesting work. We also have the benefit of, you know, our sister club in Arsenal and the company that they have, StatDNA. And Fran Taylor was obviously a big part of that as well in the past. So, you know, looking at joint ventures there and looking at how we best utilize that information to again go out and identify top level targets. So Robin's 100% on board with that. I mean, I think Toronto are another club that do it incredibly well. You know, Devin up there is a really talented individual as well. So I don't think he sees it as being any different. Like, it's something that he believes in. He knows how important it is. He's very interested in that information, and he's coming from one club that does it well to another club that does it very well. So nothing really changes, I think, there from where we were in the past. With regards to sports science, it's fundamental. I think, you know, the days of being able to just, you know, go out and have a few training sessions and then go and play a game are long, long gone at this point in time. And ultimately, from a performance perspective and sports science perspective, what you're looking to do is to make sure that you've got, you know, the loading right throughout the season so that the players are ready to peak 34 times a year, Saturday night, 7 o'clock, and they're ready to go at maximum capacity. So it's so important, whether it's, you know, everybody talks about the technical and tactical side of it, but I think the physical and the mental side of it as well are crucially important. And when we talk about sports science, we're not just talking about that physical side, we're also talking about the player's mental well-being as well, and making sure that, you know, they're in a position where they can go and perform to the height of their capabilities every Saturday night.
I've got a bit of a rabbit hole that I want to go down. So you can see in front of me, I have the I have the Rapids Way Denver Post op-ed from 2 years ago. I reread this prior to Robin Fraser's appointment. I reread it afterwards, and he said something in interview. So I'm going to try and tie some things together and see how you feel about it. So first of all, I want to read, player acquisition alone is not enough. We are going to implement a system, a set of principles that allow us to think vertically and allow our attacking players more freedom. We want to be a highly intensive team that is willing to take calculated risks in the right area of the field, but all while maintaining the defensive discipline that is part and parcel with who we are and always have been. In short, we will hold tight to the things that this club stands for, but we will find the evolution in the areas that we aspire to improve. So I guess in that spectrum, I think there's probably two ends of things. You know, there's Sean Dyche in Burnley and being completely focused on defense and everything. And maybe one of the spectrum was, you know, tiki-taka with Barcelona, or maybe even what Pep Guardiola is doing at Manchester City right now. And I think this article was sort of born out realizing that 2017 wasn't enough. It was too close to Burnley. And then obviously the league was going in a different direction where that wasn't going to be a sustainable methodology. And maybe things in 2018 were a little bit too close to tiki-taka. You know, I would say that Connor Casey found a nice little balance in there, and then Robin Fraser evolved on that, and he even said, I don't remember the exact quote, but it was, you know, if we you know, sacrifice 50% of what we're doing defensively to score 50% more goals, but we give up that many more goals, that's not a benefit. And he saw that in this team and in this roster and what they had done under Coach Casey, that there were elements for them to sacrifice. I'm just throwing out numbers here, but, you know, let's say 15% of what they were doing defensively, and then maybe getting 30 or 40% on the attacking side. And he saw that there was a foundation there, and that was something that he could build on. In that, how much freedom is Robin Fraser going to have to either execute this, modify it, and ultimately implement his approach to a system and a set of principles?
So first and foremost, for a club, I think, to operate in a long-term sustainable manner, you can't chop and change on a whim. You know, and I think for any of the strongest clubs around the world, you look at what they do in terms of producing their own players. And I think that's ultimately a key goal for most clubs around the world. It's always better if you can do it with your own local players. And I think that's something that's key. Now, if you bring in different coaches one after the other with different philosophies, different structures, different ways of seeing the game, then you're constantly changing the type of player you need to bring through the academy. And ultimately, long-term, that's not sustainable. So first and foremost, the overarching philosophy of a club should come from the club. And then, if that's something that everybody's agreeing on, from ownership right the way down to management, you go and recruit coaches that see the game in a similar way to that. And there are so many coaches out there, you can always find a coach that fits your methodology and fits the way you want to do it. So that becomes a fundamental piece of it, because then you're not saying to a coach, we need you to come in and change or tweak or adapt something. What you're saying is, you're looking for coaches that trust and believe in that overarching philosophy. Mm-hmm. So I think in Robin, we've certainly found that. You know, there's no doubt about it. And when you look at what Robin wants to do, and if you look at and listen to what Robin said in his initial press conferences, he talked about manipulating numbers. Mm-hmm. He talked about looking to try and play through teams to create numerical superiority to take advantage of the space. Ultimately, you can read that again and talk about playing in a more vertical way and giving players freedom. They're very, very closely aligned. Yes. So a lot of what has been said by Robin, you know, maybe using different words, but it's very, very closely aligned to what we talked about. And we don't ever talk about sacrificing something on the defensive side or the offensive side for one or the other. We talk about a balance. Mm-hmm. You know, Robin's a defender. Robin came in as a defender. And you have a great chance of winning games when you don't concede any goals.
Yes.
It's a very, very strong foundation to start from. And I think we saw with the partnership that emerged over the latter part of the season, you know, when we were able to rattle out Tim Howard, Keegan Rosenberry, Lalas Abubakar, Tommy Smith, Sam Vines and Jack Price in front of them, that put us in a really good position. There was a lot of solid structure there. Now, the football was very, I think, very simple. When Connor came in, Connor did a great thing. He made the players feel quite comfortable straight away and said, look, we're not going to do anything complicated. He gave the players a bit of freedom, changed the atmosphere, made everybody a little bit happier to be around there. What Robin's done, though, is implemented a real plan. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the methodology that Robin implements and how he tries to advance the ball through the different phases of play, there's a clear structure there. There's a clear plan there. And I think the players have really embraced that, because now, you know, the likes of Jack Price and Kellen Acosta are getting on the ball. You know, Colbath getting on the ball. So we're trying to get our creative players and our better players on the ball as much as we possibly can, creating those numerical overloads and then putting ourselves in a position to take advantage of those. And I think obviously over the 7 games that Robin coached, you know, 5 wins speaks for itself. And to be quite honest with you, that Toronto game, you know, if we score the PK, we had a pretty good chance to win that game too. So, you know, you go away from home in a couple of games, Red Bulls away, which is not an easy place to go. You go away to Kansas, 2-0 down. Granted, the red card helps, there's no two ways about it. But the character that the team showed was tremendous in those games. But the football was very, very good. It was good football. It was actually going out there with a plan and taking it to the other team, rather than anything reactive or counter-attack or anything like that. It was a real structure, a real plan that the players jumped on very, very quickly, you know, when Robin came in. And again, we talked about Tim Howard saying the light bulb goes off. Mm-hmm. Robin was able to implement that very, very quickly. So, we're very much on the same page here, and I think that speaks not only to what we're doing at the MLS level, but to what we're doing at the USL level and into the academy level. So the curriculum, right from the start, we're there to produce players. Mm-hmm. Players have to be able to play, and that's something that we're not going to bend for.
how much authority is Robin going to have in selecting backroom staff, and could we see any additions to the staff over the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, look, a coach always has to feel comfortable with that. I mean, that's his core group that he's going in there with every day to implement his methodology from a coaching perspective. So you want the coach to have a big say in that. Now, we were thrilled with the fact that when Robin came in, obviously, you know, Darren Baisley and Neil Emblem and Chris Sharp still here, Jace Kim on the analytics side, you know, and they really got on very well from day one, and I think that's been hugely positive. We'll continue to discuss that as we move into the off season, and Robin obviously will be able to, you know, to make certain changes if that's what he's looking for, but we're very, very comfortable with the guys that we've got on board. We think we've got an excellent backroom team already.
Okay, I've got a smattering of random other stuff that I want to add that's miscellaneous. The expansion draft is coming up. The super draft is coming up. These are things that, in general, people would say have become less significant. You're still going to find an Andre Shinyashiki, but, I mean, granted, I'm asking this of a guy in a front office who's found Dom Baji and Nicky Jackson in the fourth round when both teams declined that fourth round draft pick. How important are those things, and, you know, how much have they changed in your time in MLS?
Yeah, there's no doubt they've changed, and I think they'll continue to change. There are still very, very talented players playing in the collegiate structure here in the United States, and we always have to be aware of that and on the lookout for that. I do believe, though, that as the academies continue to grow and to become stronger, and the scouting at those levels becomes better, that, you know, the focus really is in that area. There's no two ways about that, and will continue to be. For us, again, Andre was a very different player. He'd come through DU. We'd known him for a long time. He'd played for us for 2 years in the summers. We knew exactly what we were doing with that. And credit to Brian Crookham on the Nicky Jackson find. He'd seen him play a couple of times, mm-hmm. and we were well aware of what his potential was. And I think there's still a player there in Nicky Jackson. He's somebody that we're intrigued about for next year. Dom Baji, I think, just excelled on in particular on the first day of that combine back in 2015, I want to say, you know, and showed real pace. And I think, you know, it was a shrewd pickup at the time in the fourth round. But there's no doubt that they are less important than they were in the past. The expansion draft, however, is a completely different animal. And, you know, we were able to take advantage of that last year by agreeing to a deal when we knew what was going on with Kai in the background. So that's, you know, you've got to be clever about this. You've got to be always watching and seeing what's happening at other clubs to try and see, is there something that, you know, maybe you value a player slightly more, maybe a player fits more into your system than he did in another situation, and, you know, seeing can you take advantage of that. Sometimes you can, and then on other occasions it's just not possible because those players aren't emerging or they're all protected. So look, we'll never ignore any of these mechanisms. If you can add quality to your roster, you've got to do that at any opportunity. So we'll always be, you know, keeping a very, very focused eye on that. But ultimately, a lot of our resources are now very much in the academy space, and I think we've seen the benefit of that over the last few years.
Is this year's expansion draft any more chaotic because it's two teams, or, you know, is it more than, say, 2 years in a row of just one team coming in?
No, I mean, we've seen two teams before. Orlando and New York City came in at the same time as well. So, no, I mean, it just slightly tweaks your planning, but that's it.
Or just more stuff happening rather than...
Yeah, I mean, obviously you've got 10 players that are going to, you know, be selected rather than 5, so it changes that dynamic in terms of there's more availability there. But again, the planning phase of it is the same. You're still looking at, you know, where you value players, where you rank players, what assets you feel like you have that may be attractive to those teams or to other teams in the league, and looking at three-way deals. So, you know, it tweaks the availability, doubles it from 5 to 10, but in terms of planning, it's pretty much the same.
Cork, I can't believe I haven't asked you this before. Is there a club team that you supported growing up in Ireland?
Yeah, I was a big Drogheda United fan.
Okay.
They missed out on promotion this year in a playoff against Finn Harps, but they had a good year. I think growing up, they were very much a, what I would call a yo-yo team. They would be promoted from the first division into the Premier Division and relegated again. But we went through a purple period, and actually the former owner of the club passed away this week, which was very sad. He was a, you know, a legend in the town that I was from. But we had a purple period and won a league title in 2007, and Declan Fabio O'Brien took us to an FAI Cup title as well. So a lot of good times there, and obviously the more I became involved then at the FAI, I got to meet some of those players that I grew up idolising. So that was my hometown team, and that was the team I followed through thick and thin.
Okay,
a lot of both.
If there were ever a circumstance where the Rapids play that club in the Club World Cup, who are you rooting for?
It would be difficult. We both wear burgundy, so
like,
they call it Claret and Blue. We've got our burgundy here, but It's yeah, I mean, it's got to be the Rapids. That's my club. That's what I'm a part of, and that's what we're building here.
All right, Pork, thank you very much for your time, sir.
Appreciate it.